It's time for The Buzz on KFAR Radio. A look at the growing marijuana industry in Alaska. Brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company. And now, The Buzz.
Welcome, everybody, to The Buzz on 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and listen live anywhere on KFARradio.com. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Hatchie, and sitting next to me is this fine, strapping young gentleman, co-host and business partner, Sam Hatchie.
Thank you, brother. That was a great introduction. We have the greatest pleasure in the world to be sitting next to one of the pioneering members of the cannabis industry here.
Hey, pioneer.
Mr. Number One license holder, Mike Embers with Rosy Creek. How you doing, Mike?
Good. It's good to see you, Sam. It's been a minute.
I know. It's been too long. We've been just so busy with the summertime, and I would just be so curious to hear how your season went. So let's give the consumers a little bit of backstory about how you got into the industry and how you initially started farming. You founded Rosy Creek back in 97. Is that right?
Yeah, we started Rosy Creek in 97. I was a botanist with Fish and Wildlife Service here in town. I was working up in the Arctic Refuge, and I loved it. It was a great job, but I got really tired of starting a garden every summer. I'd start it, I'd plant it. I'd tell my house sitter how to water it. I went through several house sitters. They all failed. They were great house sitters, but they failed watering the garden. And I'd come home and everything would be dead, and I'd just be pulling my hair out. And so I finally did get tired of being out in the field from like Memorial Day through September. We were gone working 16 hours a day up in the Arctic Refuge.
Wow.
And it was great, but it was time to do something else. At that time, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids, and I'd always wanted to grow things.
Yeah.
And so I thought, why not start it now? So I got really lucky. I was able to get 40 acres of land right by Rosy Creek in the Tanana River, and we started clearing land, and I started putting seeds in the ground.
How was that clearing virgin Alaskan land?
It was a challenge. Basically what you have to do is with the black spruce, if they're tall enough, you cut them down, and then you could take a dozer, doze up everything into windrows, and you end up with strips of soil and strips of wood for years and years. And we worked on burning those. Finally, I'd be plowing up the soil every year, just tossing sticks to the side. And then after a while, the windrows disappeared, and I realized I haven't tossed a stick this year. so it took nice. about since 97, probably till around 2015, I pulled my last stick out of the field.
Wow.
So now it's time to clear more land.
It's only been taking 18 years.
We have about 6 acres cleared.
Okay.
Right on a bench above the river.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I never really thought about how, the root mass and the topsoil and the permafrost, how it's just so interconnected, and it would take you 15, 18 years to really get it cleared to where you're just working on that topsoil.
Right, and there is permafrost there. And so the first few years that soil, we'd have lakes, we'd have ducks swimming out there.
No kidding.
Because the permafrost would start to melt below the black spruce forest, and then you'd get these ponds where and it was nuts. So I get this tractor stuck often.
That's pretty cool. So we were approved for your first cultivation license back in August of 2016 on that fateful day. I think there were 7 of us there at the Atwood building. I remember very clearly you went up there, and there was the big round of applause. How did that feel to really, jump in head first and get into that new industry?
Well, I was scared to death.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I knew how to farm. Mm-hmm. We've been farming cut flowers and vegetables pretty successfully for almost 20 years. And I thought, how hard could it be to grow marijuana because, you know, it's a plant. Weed.
Yeah. Just like tomatoes.
Yeah. Just like tomatoes. Yeah. Little did I know. I wasn't growing marijuana prior to that, but you know, my wife looked at the books after 1 year, and this was our most successful season, 2014-2015, of growing vegetables, and we were really well known here. Mm-hmm. We sold everything at Farmers Market. I had a community supported agriculture program of 150 shares. Mm-hmm. We were selling to restaurants all over town and in Denali Park. And we looked at the books at the end of the year, and I netted 22,000. Oh. And looking at my hours I'd put in, it was like less than $1.75 an hour.
So owning your own company.
Yeah. So Joan said, "Wait, you worked that hard, and we made this much."
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
And so she said, "I hear they're going to open up marijuana licenses next year. I'll find the application for you. Why don't you think about applying?" So like I said, I thought, how hard could it be?
It's just
weed. And you know, you look at statistics, you know, and it said, you know, by far the most money you make per row foot is to grow weed.
Yeah.
So it had to be better than hauling crates of potatoes around. So or so I thought, and and so we got some seeds and started
banging away.
Yeah.
So when you jumped into it, what was some of the things you had to overcome after that initial licensing? You know, and more speaking to like security, fencing, cameras, that kind of thing, that you had to add new infrastructure that you wouldn't traditionally need for a vegetable garden.
Well, we always longed for a good moose fence because that that was the main thing that could destroy. A moose could get in to the farm and destroy, you know, $5,000 worth of crops in a night.
Oh.
So not only did the state require a bomb-proof fence, but this was our opportunity to put up a real good moose fence. So we talked to the people at the Large Animal Research Station, and I said, "What do you have?"
Mm-hmm.
And they showed me. And so they have an 8-foot bomb-proof fence, and so that's what we have around the property now, with the addition of security wire running through it and cameras all over everything.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge. You know, you have a building that you grow in, and most folks have a building. We have 6 acres that we have to cover with cameras, and so that was quite an expense.
Oh, yeah.
We have 50 to 60 cameras all over the whole property and in buildings and whatnot. So that was a big expense. The fence was a big expense because that went around actually 7 acres. And so we knew we needed to hit the ground running that first year because you can't let a summer season go in farming. You can't. The seeds have to go on the ground at a certain time. You have to plant and then the harvest comes. So we put the fence in the fall before we even applied for the permit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you can't get into the ground in the spring. The ground's frozen, but you can get into the ground, you know, up until this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only frozen maybe about a foot, and then you can get you can push posts into the ground. It's not a problem.
Just a reminder, you're listening to The Buzz on 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and live at KFARradio.com.
So when you jumped in headfirst into the short end and initiated a licensing process and set some security parameters for your garden, and what are some of the other things that differed from the cannabis industry to growing traditional vegetables? Do you have to bring in any incoming supplies, any processing materials, any like new ways of doing things that kind of deviated from what you traditionally have been harvesting with?
Like I said, I really had I hadn't been in the industry before, and the person who I hired was absolutely wonderful, very smart guy, but he had no idea either. And he had grown a lot of weed on his own in his garden, but scaling that up to an agricultural scale,
yeah.
We are actually growing it as a row crop. That's number one. That's different. So it's a different model than maybe the boutique indoor grower would do, where you're caring really carefully for every plant, trimming it. Those are your little babies. I don't have, with 10,000 plants out there, maybe that's the wrong way to do it, but with 10,000 plants out there, we, number one, don't have the time. And so it's more like we get as much, you get way lower yield per plant, but you get a lot because you have a lot of plants. But still, I had no idea how to process them. You know, I thought, wow, I know how to grow them, but now what am I going to do with all this weed? And so I tell people, when I'm growing tomatoes, you know, that's a really difficult plant to grow well. And you plant them, you baby them, you trellis them, you prune them, and then they give you tomatoes, and you harvest the tomato and you sell it.
Yeah.
Okay. You harvest buds off a marijuana plant, then the work begins.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's a great point.
It's drying.
Right. So there's and it's what they call in the agriculture business post-harvest processing. So the post-harvest part of marijuana is way more intense than anything I'd ever run across before. And I'm you know, after 7 years, we've climbed up the learning curve's flattening out, but I'm still learning. I learn a lot every day.
Yeah.
I'm out there no matter what it is, whether it's in the growing or post-harvest or the curing process, anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. So what are some things that you kind of ran into after you had your post-harvest and things that – that's one of my favorite questions to ask cultivators is, like, what are some hidden costs and some things that maybe popped up doing with, like, a transportation or the state excise tax or being able to pay your tax or just transportation of your goods and products around the state? You know, you have your marketing, you have your sales. Did that go pretty well? I mean, I know in the first year or two, it was kind of just anybody who had cannabis could sell it, you know?
Correct.
And has any of those kind of alleviated for you as far as like transportation or?
Well, the market's gone up and down as you well know. And I think we're still pretty much in the infancy of the business, although things have matured quite a bit in 7 years. And I think at the beginning, one of the challenges that we had, we didn't grow marijuana before. In a lot of cases, people were growing black market marijuana, selling it. They had those connections. People who people set up stores. People they knew each other, and we didn't know anybody. So that was one big hurdle. Yes, like you said, it was very easy to sell anything that you had at the beginning because there was so little product. But as more people came into the market, it became a lot more difficult for us. Now, the state excise tax, I saw that at the beginning, even before I applied. And my first thought was, well, this has to be changed.
Yeah.
Because what happens when the price drops? Because as if for and you might have talked about this before in previous shows, but for those of you who don't know, it's a flat tax on there's $50 an ounce on grade A bud. There's a category called immature bud, which is maybe somewhat looser larfy bud that you can make into pre-rolls. That's $25 an ounce, and then there's trim that's $15 an ounce. So that's no matter if I'm selling at $4,000 a pound or at $1,500 a pound, I have to pay the same tax.
Yeah.
So that hit us really hard right away because in our model, we have, like I said, we have lots of, and I won't say it's low quality product, but it's not necessarily the shelf appeal of it isn't like indoor weed because the diffuse sunlight makes the bud sort of larfy, and the potency, although we've gotten the potency way up from the beginning, the potency wasn't that high. So we couldn't sell it for a lot. So I was paying, in 1 year, I paid over 50% of my sales were taxes to the state.
Wow.
And I'm just amazed we're still in business.
Yeah.
Just that. And so, you know, it's hard enough when you're selling weed at top dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now with licenses not being limited, there's lots of licensees out there, and there's more and more weed on the market. The price is going down. We're still saddled with the same tax.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mike Emmers from Rosie Creek Farms.
The Buzz will return on KFAR Radio right after this word from our sponsors.
Great deals all week at the Tin and Aught Herb Company. Munchy Mondays with 15% off all edibles. Train Wreck Tuesdays get you $20 six-pack boxes. Don't miss Thirsty Thursdays, 100 milligram hash-aid drinks for just $20. Funky Friday with Bongo half off. How about Shatter Saturdays? Gets you 20% off Frogman and Choice Extracts. Sunday Funday, you'll find Old Deli strains for just $10 a gram. Only at the Tin and Aught Herb Company's all-new retail store. From cultivation to manufacturing to retail. All under one giant 50,000 square foot roof. That's Tin and Aught Herb Company. Open 7 days a week off Wells Street. License number 14467. Marijuana has intoxicating effects and may be habit forming and addictive. Marijuana impairs concentration, coordination, and judgment. Do not operate a vehicle or heavy machinery under its influence. There are health risks associated with consumption of marijuana. For use only by adults 21 and older. Keep out of reach of children. Marijuana should not be used by women who are pregnant or breastfeeding.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
We now return to The Buzz on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back to The Buzz. You're here with Mike Emmers from Rosie Creek Farms. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
No problem.
Yeah, a pleasure is ours, for sure, for sure. So right before the break, we kind of started talking a little bit about strains. And for our listeners out there, can you maybe explain to us if you guys run ruderalis versions, autoflowers, or do you run regular photoperiod plants? And maybe what are the differences in between the two?
Okay, so I can go into a long story about marijuana evolution and genetics and whatnot. But it's a big interest of mine. But basically, there are two ways in which a marijuana plant will flower.
Mm-hmm.
There's some are on a photoperiod period. So they if you initiate a certain dark period of time, then the plant will begin to flower. And that's how most marijuana is grown. It's under a regulated environment and under lights. So in especially up here where we're getting 24-hour sunlight in the summertime, it's impossible to grow a photoperiod type plant.
Yeah, I did my first summer moving up here, and I was like, and I hear from everybody, don't put regular photoperiod plants outside. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to try it anyways. Got about 3 weeks into flower, and everything froze. I mean, they were enormous.
Oh, yeah.
They were enormous plants, but they
right.
didn't.
And
nothing came from them.
Yeah, we did that too, and I can show you pictures early on. Let me back up a little bit and tell you. And so the other kind of plants. Some people call it Cannabis ruderalis, although I argue that there's no difference in species. But that is more of ruderalis means weedy.
Okay.
Literally, it means weed.
Oh.
And it grew up, the where it originated was the steppes of Central Asia.
Okay.
And at a similar latitude to where we are in Fairbanks. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in order to, it couldn't be on a, it couldn't wait for the, for the sunlight to get to a 12-12 cycle because it's, you know, it's the equinox by then and everything's frozen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that, those plants with those genetics will flower. They're on a time clock.
Yeah.
The seed goes into the ground, and in 60 days and 70 days and 80 days, they will flower no matter what.
Mm.
Okay? So those ruderalis plants, originally, they were literally really weedy plants, small, tiny things mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. its strategy was to get the seed out as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the more desirable plant for us, whether it'll get you high mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or not, would the more cannabinoids it will have are more of the photoperiod plants, things that evolve closer to the equator. So, but we can't grow those outside, and I had no desire to grow photoperiod plants. I had no idea about manipulating lights or manipulating indoor environment. I knew how to grow things outside, and so I wanted to play to my strengths.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we heard about autoflowers. We'll go with those. Now, the autoflowers that are out on the market, we were allowed to bring new genetics in at the beginning of this process.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought some autoflower seeds, put them in, and found that some weren't autoflowers. I mean, because really,
surprise.
They're relatively new in the commercial cannabis. Okay, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the genetics, they haven't dialed the genetics in really that well. So, for example, if I go out there and I want to plant Green Magic broccoli, and I buy some hybrid seeds of Green Magic broccoli, and I plant, 15 rows, every plant's going to look the same
yep.
because people have been working with that variety for a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you have to make money on it. So
they breed for yield and they breed for growth rate.
Color and flavor and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct. So, but the autoflowering plants, at least, and it's come quite a long way, even in the 7 years since I've started. But they were more geared towards people who just didn't want the hassle of having lights in their closet. They weren't meant for doing things on an agricultural scale in the far north,
mm-hmm,
even though
mm-hmm.
you could grow autoflowers up here. So what we did was what any plant breeder would do. At the beginning, we tried and failed a lot, but we took the best plants from that year and we bred to them.
Huh?
So since we're, now when you do, photoperiod plants, you can take the best plants and clone from them,
yeah.
basically take an identical, genome from them, put it in the soil and mm-hmm. sprout roots. You have the same exact plant that you started with. You can't do that with autoflowering plants because as soon as that seed pops out of the ground, a sprout comes, it'll start, it's in its genetic makeup to hit the ground running and to try to flower as soon as it can.
Yeah.
So you can't take cuttings from that because it's essentially already in flower.
Yeah, and you don't know when or if it's going to be a good production plant, or so early on if you even could take cuttings to begin with.
Just a reminder, you're here with Mike Emmers and Rosie Creek Farm. You're listening to 97.5 FM 660 AM and live on KFARradio.com.
Excuse me. So how did you decide for your breeding projects? I'm really curious about that. Yeah.
So in 2015, mm-hmm. When it had passed in 2014, we knew the commercial legalization was going to come out the next year. So mm-hmm. we did as many plants as we could legally grow
mm-hmm.
that in 2015, and we got a bunch of things from various seed banks that you can find on the internet and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we grew those out. Some were really tall plants and some were really short, fast plants.
Mm-hmm.
the tall plants, which were super autos, which theoretically got to be big plants that flowered, wouldn't flower at our latitude. Oh. They got huge. A few of them did flower, but really the plants that did the best were these really tiny short ones that mm-hmm. were, you know, 12 to 18 inches tall.
Oh, really?
That put out a flower, but it was nothing to, you really didn't want to put it in your pipe and smoke it. But yeah. So, but that somehow one of those short plants had crossed with one of the super autos, one of the few flowers it put out. And the next year, as we were putting all these plants out, when we were allowed to legally grow commercially, one plant popped out of the ground in one of our high tunnels. And it was a beautiful-looking plant. It was about 4 to 5 feet tall, had beautiful, beautiful flowers. And the only thing we could think of was it was a cross between the super autos and this really, really short plant.
Yeah, what a happy accident.
It was a happy accident. So we called that the volunteer, and we tagged that as plant number one. So for those of you who don't know, every plant has to be tagged. Plant has an identifier. It has to be entered into a cloud-based program that the state can see. It's a big – that's
– At 56 cents a tag, too.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So when you're running thousands of plants over a season, that is a lot of plant tags.
So that was plant number one.
Yeah. Maybe you can touch on this. There's male and female versions of cannabis.
Yes.
We're already almost out of time, huh?
Yeah. You're kidding.
Yeah, I know, right? It goes so quick, Mike. Definitely going to have you back for a second one. Were you trying to breed, say, feminized seeds, or when you planted your field, was it kind of like a Johnny Appleseed take where you had, you know, a few acres and you try to put out thousands of plants and then you were trying to cull some males out of there and trying to look for females, or how, you know, explain that to our listeners
a little bit. Well, exactly. So at the time, and still, we're not allowed to bring a lot of new genetics in. There's a tracking from seed to sale. Mm-hmm. So all the seeds, you have to prove where that came from the plant before, from the harvest before. So when you plant, based on the spacing of plants, say if you need 10,000 plants, you need to plant 25,000 seeds, because half will be male,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and another... And so then
10-20%,
and then another there's another 20% off the top of that, even on the females, that will be crap plants.
Yeah.
So they either won't germinate or they'll look bad. So it's not worth the ground space. So so it's pretty much just 40% of the seeds we plant, 30-40% we actually are actually going to be working for us.
That's crazy.
That summer.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time. Mike, do you want to tell everybody where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Here in town, you can find it at Nature's Relief.
Nice.
One Hit Wonder sometimes carries our stuff, and Badger Buds is a big customer of ours out North Pole.
Excellent.
Do you do anything in Anchorage or?
In Anchorage, AM Delight, Raspberry Roots.
Nice.
In the Valley, we have a lot of stuff at Country Cannabis, Matanuska Cannabis. And in Girdwood at the Herbal Cache.
All right. Yeah. Any other closing comments that you wanna put out there? Do you have a website people can contact?
We have a website, rosycreekfarm.com. It's pretty dated. We need to work on it. A lot of pictures of the farm are on Instagram, and you can see my smiling face in the cover of Alaska Leaf right now.
Yeah. Congratulations. Congratulations. Yeah, harvest season. Yeah. Yeah, what's up, Rosy Creek?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah,
it's always a pleasure to see you guys.
Oh,
well, nice. I was telling brother earlier, I was like, hey, we're sitting down with Mike Kemmer, one of the nicest guys in the industry.
Like, one of our oldest friends here.
I know,
like,
right?
We met you on freaking day one.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, we're so glad. We'll definitely have to get you back. I have a whole huge list of questions.
Yeah, we just scratched the surface.
I know, right? Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Well, this has been another episode of The Buzz. Thank you for sharing a small part of your Saturday with us. For more information about Tanner Herb Company or our retail store, come see us at 1200 Wells Street in Fairbanks. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, or tannerherbcompany.com. Coming up is Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper.
You've been listening to The Buzz on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at kfarradio.com. Brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company on Well Street. License number 14467. To listen back to this or past episodes, go to the archives page on the KFAR website. This has been a production of Last Frontier Media Active and KFAR Radio.